It's the morning show. I'm Shereen Seward. As part of our food series this month about food in the kitchen and tools, we discuss the allure of copper pots and pans and how to make the best use of them. Call in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah Dahman is an author and the designer and founder of House Copper and Cookware. It's an American-made kitchenware and copper cookware line. She's believed to be one of the only female coppersmiths building cookware in the U.S. Sarah, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, Shereen. It's great to be back.
Why should someone who has never used copper cookware invest in this type of tool?
Well, the best, my favorite reason is because it's an heirloom piece. Copper cookware, especially tin-lined copper cookware, won't end up in a landfill. It's something that can be restored for centuries. And so it's kind of an investment piece that is also extremely efficient and much faster than stainless steel at or cast iron at a fraction of the energy needed. So there's a lot of good that comes with learning how to cook in it, even if you have just one pot, just to learn.
What are some of those benefits? So things really do cook faster?
Yeah, so copper is 25 times more conductive, meaning it heats faster than stainless, for instance, and much faster even than cast iron. So, and you also need, instead of medium to high heat, for the same results, you need like low heat, and you're going to get the cooking done faster using that less heat because of that conductivity differentiation between the metals. And copper is just that much faster and able to perform that much speedier.
It sounds like it's a bit of an adjustment, too, for cooks who have never tried it before. Is there a bit of a learning curve there?
Oh, there's such a huge learning curve. And some people will have their, you know, a vintage piece or something that belonged in their family re-tinned, putting a new layer of tin in there so that it's food safe, so that the copper pot's food safe. And they forget and they put on, you know, one piece of steak and rev it up like it's a piece of steel cookware. And then they're shocked that the tin melts. So there is definitely a learning curve, as you said. That's a great way to say it.
I understand you recently got back from a trip to Europe to visit and work with coppersmiths in France. What did you learn in that exchange?
You want to know the most fun? Well, I mean, I will be honest. There was a huge language barrier, but the ateliers, which is what they call their copper working shops, what was most interesting to me was the tools that I use, even today, are from the 1700s and 1800s, but a lot of them were built and patented here in the U.S., and so they never had them over in France. So the trade itself really hasn't changed dramatically. The tools and the stakes and the techniques are still the same ones that were used in 1776 all the way to today. And so these tools from like 1810 that I use, mm-hmm. they don't have them over there. They don't have any of them. And so that was a huge eye-opener for me because I'm very attached to my 1800s tools and they don't have them.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm curious about some of the considerations that home cooks should keep in mind when cooking with copper. And one of the things is the chemical reactions that occur with copper that can affect how food is cooked or prepared. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you want to cook on something that's inert. So for instance, copper itself is, fast. That's the best part. But the interior should be tin if you're going to go with something highly efficient. You can get stainless line copper too, but that's a very different discussion to talk about the differentiation between steel line copper and tin line copper. But because of how fast it cooks, and because the surface is inert, meaning it doesn't interact with the food, but it does, like for instance, tin will put a micronutrient just by cooking with it into your food, you are able to, you can cook with what I say a paintbrush. You can have extremely precise temperature, and that's why in the old days, copper was often used to make really delicate roux and a lot of sauces because you needed perfect control without burning. You can even bake in copper and have, you know, perfect bottoms on your cookies or your pizza crust because it is so even and as well as fast. There's just no hot spots like you get in a cast iron skillet, for instance. So that those kinds of reactions to your food are more, it's not so much reaction, it's just the ability to have your food perform in the pot the way you want it to.
As part of our month-long series examining tools around the kitchen, we explore the world of copper cookware. Sarah Dahman is a coppersmith, author, and the designer and founder of House Copper and Cookware. You can be part of this conversation by calling in with your questions or thoughts on cooking with copper pots and pans. 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Show. I'm Shereen Seward. Today we learn how to care for and use copper cookware. It's part of our food series highlighting kitchen tools and how to make the most of them. Call in with what you've personally learned and your questions on how to care for those pots and pans properly. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah Dahman is a coppersmith. She is author and designer and the founder of House Copper and Cookware. She stays with us. How can home cooks determine which kind of copper cookware is right for them? What's the best way to choose it?
Well, there's technically two kinds of copper cookware. The first is, as I said earlier, it's tin-lined copper, and then there's the stainless-lined copper. And while they both have very different cooking properties just because of those linings, the difference in terms of choosing is comes down to care. Stainless does not need to be replaced over time. The lining stays in there, and you don't, and you can be really rough. You can use metal utensils. You can be really aggressive when you're using them. Whereas tin is a lot more delicate. It does wear down over the course of a decade or so, and you do need to get it relined. So there's kind of an ongoing expense. But all copper needs polishing, and all copper should not go in the dishwasher. So that's where the similarity is between those two types of linings of pots. It doesn't matter. You're going to be using ketchup to polish the outside of your pot, whether it's no matter the lining.
Okay, we're going to get into cleaning in just a moment, but I first want to talk about the expense. Copper cookware sets can cost upwards of $1,000. It can be really expensive. So what do you suggest for home chefs who work with copper cookware, you know, without this huge cost? What should they do? A piece at a time? What do you suggest?
I do suggest going to estate sales if you want to look, or even at antique stores around Wisconsin. We've had lots of good luck finding there, or even on eBay, and you get an old piece and you can have it relined with tin, with, you know, brand new tin for a fraction of the cost of a brand new pan. And then you have something that is, you know, historic and has probably a story that you can make up if you don't know it. And it'll be brand new and you can start using it. So I think that there is this preconception, every pot is hundreds of dollars. Well, yeah, brand new it is, or really thick copper walls. Yes, they end up being more expensive. Just there's a lot of copper. Copper is not cheap. But you can find those old pieces and have them restored for, you know, $50.
Well, you know, it's, Who does that kind of work? Like, where would you go to get that done? I wouldn't even know.
I do it.
Oh.
But also, I reline copper cookware. But there's also a couple other people who do it on the side in the Midwest. I know the master tinsmith I apprenticed under, he'll do it here and there. There's people in Michigan who have started doing it. So I can teach people. There's people who are kind of dabbling in it all over, and once you start, you go on Facebook and find who loves copper cookware, they know about 5 retinners in their area.
It's okay.
Kind of coming back, thank heavens.
So it can be done. It can be done.
Yes.
All right, let's get back to the cleaning. You mentioned ketchup, so I'm just so intrigued. How do you properly clean this stuff?
Well, ketchup actually does work. So does a potato or anything with oxalic acid. And so ketchup's just the easiest because it squirts out of a bottle and you don't have to do anything fancy, and you can rub it on and let it kind of sit there for a little short while, not even dry, and then rinse it off. And that'll kind of get stripped down those darker layers of oxidation and get to the shinier, brand new penny look of copper when it's new. You can also people have used, you know, vinegar, they've used lemon juice. I tend not to. I like the ketchup just because it's just more fun to smear ketchup on cookware. But anything like that works just as well. I do say, you know, unless you have a really old piece that needs some serious grinding, to stay away from salt. Some people will do a mix of salt to get down there, but you can scratch your copper, especially if you don't have a nice fine-grained salt, which you would also, you know, you'd use the salt with the ketchup or with the lemon juice or with the vinegar. And I just, that's a, my personal preference. You can certainly use salt. You just might see micro scratches. But otherwise, there's always a lot of chemical cleaners you can also use. I just, I tend not to go there right away if I don't have to.
Okay.
Because it's just not safe. Yeah.
We're talking about copper cookware with Sarah Dahman, an author and coppersmith who designed and founded House Copper and Cookware. You mentioned safety just now, so I have to ask. The FDA has warned against cooking with unlined copper cookware because copper can leach into food and cause copper toxicity. How can a home cook know whether it's time to reline their copper cookware? What's a good sign?
The standing rule is if there is enough copper that's kind of the size of a 50-cent piece showing, then you should have it relined. And, you know, that goes back, you know, you can use online copper if you're making jam, because the sugar, coats the copper just enough that it creates some sort of, it's like a protection. So there are certain things you can do in online copper, very few, but everything else, yeah, you should have it lined. And, it's, that is the standing rule. If you have stainless lined copper cookware, you don't have to worry about it. And truly, I mean, at least now we know we have safe tin and stainless linings back in the day. In order not to cook on that very, you know, awful copper that would leach in your food, they would line them with lead.
Oh my goodness. Can you even imagine that now? No.
Yeah, right? This lead is so much better for you.
No, oh, yes, exactly. Hey, you mentioned earlier about utensils, you know, using metal utensils. So what do you need to use when you're talking about copper cookware? What's the best stuff to use when you're you know, sauteing or cooking with it? Do you have to use like a rubber or what?
Yeah, silicone is great. You know, if you think about it, this kind of cookware, especially if it's tin lined, you know, it goes back centuries. And what did they have in their kitchens back then? They did have some, you know, copper or brass utensils, but they mostly had wood spoons. So that's, you just go back to the standard wood spoon, or, you know, if you need a rubber spatula, and you're good to go. And that won't do any damage. That'll, you know, prolong the life of your tin. If you have stainless, like I said, you know, go beat the heck out of it if you want. But it, you know, stainless lined copper performs different than tin lined copper. I'll just leave it there.
Okay. Okay. Hey,
it's like the ongoing debate. How many hours do we have? No.
I can tell this is a passion point for you. So, how did you get started with copper cooking? I mean, what introduced you to it?
You know, I'm a writer first. I was researching for my historical fiction novels, and I went down the rabbit hole of what women used in the kitchen in pioneer days, and then decided I would do some deeper research, which was learning the trade from a local tinsmith, from Bob Bartlemy in West Bend. And then I decided to start my own, you know, to really make my own cookware line in my garage. And then, of course, you should probably cook with your merchandise, make sure it works. So, you know, it was this very meandering path of a lot of yeses, sure, I'll try it. And here we are today talking about it, right?
Yes. Yes. No kidding. Do you think that copper is kind of seeing an emergence, a reemergence, so to speak? Is it becoming more popular? Are people going back to it?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I started this about 8-9 years ago, I think. And it was one of those, people were like, well, no one's going to cook in it. I mean, nobody was even making copper cookware in the United States when I started doing this. And, you know, the manufacturing was gone. No one was doing it because they said no one would use it. And now, I mean, now vintage pots restored sell for thousands sometimes. I mean, it's really coming back, kind of the way cast iron disappeared briefly in some ways and now has had this massive resurgence. The bell curve of copper is behind cast iron, but it's coming back. I've seen a huge change over maybe even since the pandemic, really. People started to really look at what they were cooking in and asking questions. And that was really an unexpected boon of the pandemic for me anyway. Find the silver lining, Sarah.
We always have to find the silver lining, right? Yeah. I guess if somebody wants to get started with this, what's the number one copper pan that they need? What's the size they need? What should they start with?
I would say either a skillet or just a small like saucepan or pot, which is, you know, just kind of like a standard cooking pot, because those can be your workhorses. You can use them for anything. You can use them for stir fries. You can use them for making mac and cheese out of a box. My kids use copper pots to make mac and cheese out of a box. Like, that's how unprecious it is when you get used to it. Those will give you the most variety that you can cook, you know, whatever you want to cook, you kind of can use it for that. So I would say, you know, skillet or just simple pot, and whatever fits in your kitchen size-wise, and go play.
Well, thank you. I'm sure my husband's listening right now, thanking you mentally for and preparing himself for our next purchase, which he knows is going to be coming. Sarah Tommen is a coppersmith, author, and designer and founder of House and Copper Cookware. Ahead, we hear about induction cooking and its pros and cons as our series on food and tools in the kitchen continues. Call in with your induction cooking questions anytime. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Thanks again to Sarah. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward, and for Kate Archer Kent, our series on food and making the most of the tools in your kitchen continues with a primer on induction cooking, what it is, how it differs from electric and gas, and whether or not it's right for you. Join in by calling with your questions or comments on induction stovetops, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Rochelle Boucher is an induction cooking super fan. She is senior lead for culinary events and experiences with Building Decarbonization Coalition. Rochelle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much. It's really a pleasure.
Well, what brought you to this, that you're such a vocal proponent of induction cooking?
Great question. I'm a chef. And so my whole life, you know, I've been a private chef for years. I've cooked for some absolutely legendary people. So I've had a restaurant career, actually initially on the East Coast, came out to California and was fortunate enough to become a private chef. Like, how fun is that?
Yeah.
And so, you know, working directly with legendary people in their homes, and was also a cooking teacher. And in that time, I began also working for the appliance industry. And your state has some pretty legendary appliance brands there. So got to work in the appliance industry and became a corporate chef in the appliance industry. And my whole job was to cook with people, for people, and really understand how cooking appliances work. And it led me right to induction very wholeheartedly.
Well, talk about induction and how it is different from other forms of cooking like gas and electric.
Absolutely. Induction is an entirely different thing. So, you know, of course, we think about electric kitchens, we talk about it, and obviously people think of the coil electric or the flat top electric, which is called resistance. Mm-hmm. Both of those get quite hot. They can be a little bit hard to control, really not always super powerful. And, you know, sometimes not that safe. They can get, you know, pretty hot. Mm-hmm. And so when people think of electric kitchens, they certainly often think of that. Now we have, and actually have had for many, many years, induction. It looks similar to the resistance induction or the electric resistance, in that it's this flat top, but it works through, there's a copper coil that gives off a very safe magnetic wave, and it actually connects directly to the pot and to the metal molecules in the pot, and it creates friction by microscopic movement, and your pot becomes your heat source. It is an entirely amazingly powerful way to cook, very, very big in Europe, certainly, and really growing here in the United States. Really, it's cooking with magnets, but I think it's cooking with magic, truly.
Well, I'm curious about the materials then. Do only some materials work with these induction stovetops? I mean, considering the heat that we're talking about here.
Right, exactly. You know, you've got that, you intuited that right, in that induction is so powerful. It is easily twice as fast as even pro gas. So yes, you know, I mean, the cookware, you definitely want cookware that can handle the heat. Most cookware can handle the heat, but the cookware does need to be magnetic. So one of the, a little bit more of a myth than a truth is that, quote, you have to change out your cookware. You do not have to change out your cookware. But you have to make sure that a magnet sticks to the bottom. And that is, a lot of cookware works that way. Actually, really only copper, pure copper, pure aluminum, which fewer people are using these days, and some of that glass cookware, those are the main styles of cookware that don't work. Everything else works, and that's wonderful, from, you know, inexpensive, powerful cast iron to your triple clad and multi-clad cookware.
We're talking about induction cooking with Rochelle Boucher, and she is Senior Lead for Culinary Events and Experiences with the Building Decarbonization Coalition. How is the experience different from gas stoves and how it feels? My husband is a big gas stove guy.
You know, I understand that. I, you know, I've been in the appliance industry literally for decades. You know, in the 80s, gas came along, certainly pro gas came along, that more powerful, higher BTU gas. And at that time, it did create this more powerful, more controllable way to cook. So I am so fortunate that I've been cooking on induction now for a very long time. There is a mind switch. You know, you're looking at this thing and it seems like sometimes high tech. No, some induction has knobs, some have slide screens. So sometimes your interface is different. But induction is so fast. So for people who haven't had a chance to use it, which is most people, and I'm doing everything that I can to get people to try it, you know, you don't have that initial visual cue to look down. But what you have is this remarkable speed and remarkable control. You see the pot water boil right in front of your eyes. When you turn it down, you see the food react instantly. So getting used to that speed and control, it can be something, you know, a little different at first. So I really understand changing what we've done for many years. But that's my entire job. And I'm very passionate about it, to show people that that experience.
What advice do you have for home chefs when they're trying to adapt their cooking techniques to work with induction stovetops?
Absolutely. There, you can cook everything on induction. The pan, it is just a way to deliver heat. So it doesn't change the flavor, anything like that. You just have to prep your food beforehand. I think a lot of people, even with pro gas, they're used to cranking that pan up really high and then maybe finishing their chopping, finishing their prep. So just really getting used to that speed and control is something, you know, so you will have to, you know, get used to it. I usually have people sort of boil water a couple times and, you know, it's like taking a really fast car out for a quick drive. And just getting used to that speed. So getting your prep done ahead of time and, you know, just always being aware of it. Once you get a couple, you know, a day or so of cooking, you adapt really quickly. And then you become often, like me, an advocate where you just bring people in your house, your apartment and say, you got to see this. And really, you know, share that experience with other people.
When you started with this, what was the most challenging aspect of it?
When I started cooking with induction, it was really fun because I was in this, you know, you've got to picture this like you have up there in Madison and in Fitchburg with the Sub-Zero Wolf Company, kind of picture these gorgeous appliance showrooms with live gas ranges and live induction and all of these amazing appliances around. And that's been my playland for many years. And so for me, I iterated into it. You know, I would be cooking on gas and I would work on the induction. And all four of my colleagues that I worked with in one of the places that I worked recently, we all became induction converts without even realizing. But we all just started only cooking on it because of the speed, the control. So for me, because I iterated into it, it wasn't difficult. I think for people, if it's new to them, you know, just trying something new and sort of, again, that speed and control can be very surprising. And you know, realizing that visual cue where, you know, how you tip your head down and you try to look at the flame, mm-hmm. you know, that's not really as informative as people may think, because with induction, you can really actually know your exact cooking temperatures in a lot of cases. So it was easy for me, but I think for others, trying it and getting used to that speed and control.
Has the technology evolved, or is it pretty much the same as it's always been with induction cooking?
Just like anything, the technology has absolutely evolved. So anybody that may have used induction even 5 years ago, or if you use what's called a hob, like an individual plug-in, sometimes we think of those as like calling it like a plug-in burner, but it's not really, the name is a little different. So if you use a plug-in unit, sometimes they can be a little, sometimes make a sound or a noise, you can hear the fans, or you may have had less power a few years ago. Now the things that are available to people and then what's coming are remarkable. So you've got quiet pieces, you have much more powerful cooktops or ranges. And when I talk about that, you know, the cooktop is what drops into your counter, and that can be electric, gas, or induction. And a range is the entire thing that slides in, sometimes called a stove. So there are cooktops, there are ranges, there are plug-in units that have not only amazing, so quiet and so powerful, but there's all kinds of like an iPhone or a smartphone, you can even start building in applications and things like that, which can be really, really fun. Smart cooking is here to stay.
And what kinds of advancements are you expecting? You mentioned the future. So what are you looking forward to?
Yes, well, it's very exciting. So there are technologies, for example, where you can, things that exist right now, pardon me, if your water or your, you know, water boils out or your food cooks away in your pan, there are things like automatic shutoff. So it will automatically shut off in case you need to. There are whole surface induction cooking, meaning instead of cooking on a different sort of little circle or little area that's indicated, you can cook on the full surface. You can often move your pan around and your heat will go where that pan goes. You can cook to exact temperatures, which I love. So if you are frying chicken, you can set your oil to an exact temperature. And even as you put more food in, it will bring that temperature right back up without having to touch it. So those are some things that live now. What are coming are all kinds of different sizes. So 36 inch ranges exist, 48 inch, you know, gorgeous gourmet ranges that have that same look. Your state's beautiful company, Sub-Zero Wolf, has some beautiful, wonderfully powered ranges up there near Madison. Mm-hmm. So that's an exciting place to go visit. And then battery backup powered ranges.
Interesting.
So you can get a range. Yes. Instead of having to do electrical, you can have a 110 powered range, plug it right into your regular battery or your regular wall, and it has a battery boost. So it will make up that power difference, as well as it can even function when you don't have power.
We are wrapping up a month-long series about tools in the kitchen, gathering advice, and answering your questions on induction stovetops. Rochelle Boucher is an induction cooking superfan, senior lead for culinary events and experiences with Building Decarbonization Coalition. Call in with your questions or thoughts at any time, 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seewert. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seewert. Rochelle Boucher is an induction cooking superfan. She is senior lead for culinary events and experiences with Building Decarbonization Coalition. Is an induction stove your next kitchen purchase? Call in with your questions or your cooking observations. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. It's all part of our month-long series on food and kitchen tools. Rochelle, we have a caller. John is with us from Madison. Hi, John. What question did you have for us?
Well, and first of all, I just turned this on. I got on the road, and this is wonderful. I'm in the market for buying a new stove. And the one question I had, I think I just got answered, in that you can also use this as an oven, this induction cooking as an oven as well as a stove top.
Rochelle?
Yes, that's a great question. And many people have that question. So, John, you can get a cooktop in and of itself that just sits on, you know, into the counter, or you can get a whole range, meaning the cooktop and the oven together. Now, the top will be powered by induction. The oven will be electric ovens. And as many people may know at this point, today's electric ovens are considered to be really superior. They're wonderful. You have a lot of great evenness and control. So you're getting the best of both worlds. So yes, you can get an all electric range, which is induction on the top, and with an electric, what's also often called a convection oven below. A convection oven is an oven that has a fan inside of it that moves the air. And again, up in Madison, you've got some of the greatest oven technology in the world up there. So, you can get an all-electric range.
Okay. Thanks for asking that question, John. That was great. And Rochelle, I really appreciate the explanation. We have another caller with us. Shelly is with us from Burlington. Shelly, hi.
Hi. I had a comment and question. I've been cooking with induction for about 10 years. I love it. I have the independent plug-in burners, whatever they're called, which I love because you can actually, I move them all over the house, even take them outside and cook in summer. I cook outside with them. You can kind of take your range wherever you need it to be, which is fantastic. And I love the speed and quickness of it and the safety. It doesn't get, if the pot boils over, you can kind of lift up the pot, wipe the burner off and not have to worry about your towel catching on fire or anything. It's fantastic. But the only problem I have with them is I find it difficult to simmer foods. It seems like when I'm trying to simmer for any length of time, it either is too hot or stops. And I'm wondering, like I said, my units are about almost 10 years old, and I'm wondering if maybe the newer units would solve that issue.
Rochelle, what advice do you have for Shelly?
Absolutely. And, you know, I want the audience to know that Shelly is typical of a person that has tried this out. We become advocates. We talk about safety, all of this. So thank you so much. Yes, it absolutely has changed. So being that you are working on the plug-in units and they are 10 years old, like, yay you for being an early adopter and in the United States. So yes, you will definitely find remarkable lower power, not only in the updated hot plug-in units, but certainly in all the cooktops and all the ranges, getting to that really low. So I do a demonstration where I melt 9 pounds of really expensive white chocolate forever in a big giant pot, and it stays that way forever. So that has changed. But thank you for bringing up cleaning and safety, because once you go to that level of cleanability and safety, Shelly and I will tell you, it's pretty hard to go back.
All right. We are weighing the pros and cons of induction stoves with Rochelle Boucher, the senior lead for culinary events and experiences with the Building Decarbonization Coalition. We just have a couple of minutes left, but we also have Jeff on the phone with us. Jeff is calling from Eau Claire. Hi, Jeff. What's your question?
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We recently remodeled our kitchen and we had ordered an induction cooktop, but we backed off and we had done some reading about health issues. People with pacemakers apparently can be affected by the magnetic usage, and also pregnant women are supposed to stay away from that type of usage, I guess.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Rochelle, what do you say to Jeff's concerns?
Very important question. I am definitely not a doctor. However, there are many studies finding that it's a very, very safe technology to be around, actually much lower emissions than even microwaves. You would really have to get remarkably, remarkably close to the unit, almost on top of it. However, for people who do have concerns, you can definitely speak with your doctor. The health benefits in terms of your air quality, in terms of not burning fuels in your home, in terms of sort of not getting methane and all these other gases, as well as additional microparticulates, as well as heating up your home, the safety, the layers of safety that you get with induction cooking, as Shelly alluded to, it doesn't get nearly as hot and burn you, are amazing. So for people, if they do have a pacemaker and a concern, definitely look into that. For all the rest of us, the safety benefits are just so exciting. And it's not new technology. This has been around for since the 1930s, and it's been one of the predominant way to cook in Europe for decades. So there is a lot of a body of evidence and proof of people living incredibly safely and more safely by not burning fossil fuel inside their kitchen.
10 seconds. Yes. 10 seconds left. What could switching to induction mean for the environment overall?
For the environment, it is a great win. You are not burning, again, fossil fuels inside your home. It helps your internal environment in terms of being safer, cleaner, and it's just a really exciting way to move into a cleaner and healthier future.
Rochelle, thank you so much for being here today.
Absolutely a joy.
Rochelle Boucher is an induction cooking super fan. She is senior lead for culinary events and experiences with Building Decarbonization Coalition. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.